villain.
Scale 10
was a good number.
That was my number.
That used to be better. Have my donuts number.
That was. I'm here with number 14. Bad news ramen.
114. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Then it's going to be real.
So you you're going the extra mile tonight because you wanted to postpone the podcast because the Warriors are on. Even they're up by 20, and all I got to do is move my head, and you're trying to watch my big screen TV. My
with the parabola over here.
My ultra HD, bulletproof. My ultra HD TV, that's a rocking dude. So, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, you're not. The Entourage commercial's on right now. You want to watch that too?
Nah, I'm checking LeBron's hairline right now.
He put that spray on. He had to put that spray on for that commercial, dude.
Yeah, definitely. And then he's eating the Fruity Pebbles like he's John Cena over here. See, it all ties into wrestling.
It all ties in. There you go. Did that pretty good.
Thank you. It's called a professional segue right there. So, do you have anything you wanted to touch on to start this?
Well, if we're going professional segue, right, when you bring up John Cena, the Neville match that you had, I thought it was a good match. Entertaining, some good storytelling to it. How much of that is Neville, and how much do you think that's John Cena? Because it's kind of hard. I mean, you know,
it's probably 50-50.
Okay, so is John Cena becoming are you in the camp that John Cena can wrestle and that everybody's given a bad time, they're just being too critical of this guy? Where are you in terms of that?
He's not the worst wrestler. Excuse me, sorry about that. You know, in terms of, it's like, in the role that he's playing as, like, the number one guy, for quite some time, you've often got guys that were big and strong and couldn't really wrestle, like your Hulk Hogan's, for example. You know, he's a better wrestler than Hulk Hogan, and there's no question about that. I just feel like just his whole thing overall is just really corny, right? And so even, like, some of his sells, like his shoulder block, like some of these moves, they just come off looking really goofy, the way he, like, flops around in the ring. Maybe I'm nitpicking. But I mean, he's capable of having good matches. So, I mean, this is fine. You know, if you put him in there with Neville and they put on a good match, then I got no problem with that.
Is he better served just going out there and wrestling and not cutting a promo every single time he has to?
Absolutely. I mean, his promos are awful. I thought by his standards, that wasn't the worst promo that I had heard. The one the week before was way bad. So, you know, it was all right for what it was. I like it better that it's in the middle of the show and the show's not based around it. You know, you're going to get that segment. And I think they're doing a good job now of at least putting them in the ring with other guys that can wrestle. And I think that's where they fall in the John Cena trap, is like they got to always find some guy that's bigger than him so they can try to oversell that he's this underdog going against Rusev or going against Ryback or going against whoever, like, this like really big wrestler is, and then it just ends up being a slow John Cena type match. But at least, like, the guys they're putting on this U.S. Open Challenge are all guys that are pretty good workers for the most part.
So it took them about maybe a month and a half for them to get their act together with the Open Challenge, and now I think it's going full force with everything.
This time it's going full force.
Yeah, and I knew I was getting in trouble when I brought that up. But here's the thing: is that they're going to say when this guy is all said and done that he's going to be one of the best of all time. And my thing is that you can't be the best of all time if you're only as good as the person you're working with. I think guys elevate him. I don't think he elevates guys.
Right.
It's kind of different. Like, you know, I kind of draw the parallel to Undertaker when he fought Jeff Hardy. And Jeff Hardy got a really big rub from Undertaker. And kind of like, you know, Undertaker, you can kind of compare him to Cena in terms of in the ring. But I think it's just Undertaker's, you know, Undertaker's not corny. I mean, yeah, you know, his gimmick for a while, I mean, I think his gimmick is kind of weak, but at the same time, there's no frills about it. And Undertaker can make a guy on any given night in his prime, not now. But, and I think that's where the difference is. I mean, I think Cena's going to go the way of like a Bruno Sammartino, where there's this reverence for Bruno Sammartino. I personally have never seen why Bruno gets the reverence that he does. I mean, I think he was an object of his time, and I think John Cena, you really can't say that about him either. You can't say that Cena is a picture of his time, where he's like the, you know, a pocket of time in wrestling where that worked, because I don't think it does work. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of like the overwhelming machine of what the WWE is. They can put anybody in any spot. They decided to hang their hat on Cena, and this is what they have. And it's just something we have to live with. I mean, it was funny. It's two guys that, it's Neville and Cena that I do not like in the ring. But I thought it was a good match. I mean, I'm sitting there watching the match and going, you know, this is a, I wouldn't even say it's, I'm not sitting there going like it's a passable match. I mean, this was a good match. I enjoyed watching it. I guess I liked it that Neville was protected in the end because his move wasn't kicked out. I think it was a good way to kind of protect Neville and protect Cena at the same time, by having Rusev kind of break in.
Even though it doesn't make a ton of sense for Rusev to want to get involved in this match, but
yeah,
but that's, yeah, it is what it is.
Well, because he wants John Cena. He wants to beat John Cena.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, whatever it is, and, you know, that's what it is, and whatever. the Raw was set up well. I like the two small guys, Noble and
Mercury
fighting Dean Ambrose. I mean, I fast forwarded the match, but watching it fast forward, I was like, oh, that's a good spot. Yeah. But I mean, it was nice. The thing is, like, to me, like, the whole Raw from top to bottom was a good Raw, but it's kind of the same thing where the main event really doesn't do anything. Now, granted, Randy Orton and Rollins is a textbook match, but what I kind of wanted to bring out is how do you feel about Mercury and Noble jumping in at the end of every match? I mean, do you think this is like kind of like a, I mean, because I kind of relate to like kind of like a four horsemen buildup or like a heel buildup where there's always an interference, there's never like a clear cut finish to the match. And it sets up. So finally, when it's one-on-one, you know, Seth Rollins loses or like that, it's going to mean a lot more. Do you kind of see it that way?
I think it's just like a way that they're trying to, like, protect guys so they don't lose. I don't necessarily think it means more. I guess maybe it does make it mean more, but it's just kind of, I think it's a little bit overdone. I don't think that any of these guys, I don't think any of those four guys is going to lose any real momentum in anybody's eyes if they lose a match. Maybe Reigns would be the person that would stand the most to lose by getting pinned, but Ambrose has lost so much that, like, that's not an issue. Randy Orton's lost his fair share of matches throughout his career, and Seth Rollins, while he wins, you know, probably I'd say 85% of the time, you know, he's been pinned and rolled up a couple. I mean, he got rolled up last week with Ambrose. So, and then that, I think that's, I mean, maybe so, because I think that's kind of what made that match cool. Like, generally, like, a roll up finish is kind of, you know, tainted or whatever, right? But like, it was a good finish the way that match was, and so maybe the fact that maybe it was able to mean a little bit more just on the fact that the interference wasn't able to get there on time. So I don't know, maybe so, but I don't feel like these guys are going to lose any kind of momentum if they lose a match here and there.
What about the whole argument of, and this is an argument that we've brought up a lot, where the champion isn't protected, especially, you know, these were for, like, the smaller titles here and there, but you had, like, kind of like the world championship, and, like, let's say last week, right, like, Seth Rollins lost, you know, straight up to Dean Ambrose, whatever it is. I mean, is that an issue now? I mean, how do you, I mean, because we're kind of sitting here going, everything that we normally would want to see from, like, a new guy like Seth Rollins, you know, I mean, the try and choose shtick is, like, put the belt on him, see if you can draw money, protect him and everything like that. He's somewhat protected, but at the same time, it's not following, like, the textbook of what me and you would like to see. How's that playing out now?
I think it's fine because, like, I mean, I'm going to compare it to, like, Barrett because that's the first guy that comes into mind, right? Barrett's out there losing 75% of his matches, and that's really not taking care of your guy. With Rollins, like I said, you know, he's still winning probably 85% of the time. So I think he is protected, but I think it's okay if he loses every once in a while, as long as the guys are legit, because then on the other side of the coin, when Bear is losing, he's jobbing out to R-Truth, and he's losing to Sin Cara, whereas, you know, Dean's legit, right? And I think Dean needs to be elevated a little bit more than he is, especially if you're going to put him in this four-way for the title. So I think Dean stands more to gain than Rollins is losing by getting pinned in that situation. Now, if you start turning around and having Rollins, like, you know, lose to Ryback or things like this, then there's going to be a problem. But as long as he keeps winning the majority of his matches, I mean, the interference is setting him up as the chicken shit heel, which is okay. You know, there needs to be a chicken shit heel, and he's doing a pretty good job with it. But, you know, straight up on the pay-per-views and on a lot of the other matches, you know, he wins. So I think they're doing a good job.
Well, I think that's the difference, is that when it comes to a pay-per-view, you know the Seth Rollins match is going to be a great match. Mm-hmm. You know, the WrestleMania match between him and Randy Orton was okay. I mean, I think it's partially because we're watching it on the big screen as compared to in the ring, and it was kind of the opening, like the opening real legit match where it wasn't like some weak storyline. It was the first major storyline match, and it's kind of hard to have like a breakthrough match or a great match if you're like the first match. And then, what he did with when he cashed his money in the bank, it came out really well and came out really good. And that was a very intense match, it was a good match. And then, you know, I go back to the John Cena and Brock Lesnar match, and that was one of the better matches I've seen. I think that's a match where...
What? John Cena and Brock Lesnar?
The triple threat.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's one probably that we're going to put as a keynote as probably a potential match of the year. It's funny being in a WWE where as a fan you're pretty much content, because everything that's going on, every wrestler that you like is pretty much being taken care of. The matches are good, tag team division is really good. I mean, everything's working right now. So it's really kind of, I'm just kind of sitting going like, well, what the heck are we going to talk about? You know. Well, so
on to that point, then, you know, you mentioned tag teams and things working. Looks like what you've been asking for, the reunification of the Wyatt family, is in the offing, and I'm guessing you like that. I mean, I think that's a smart play.
Yeah, very smart. Especially, I think Rowan, not Rowan, but I think Harper. I don't mind Harper being the mechanic of the WWE, where he just puts on really good matches. I mean, I'd like to see him, you know, after a while start breaking through. But I mean, the thing is, the guy is still relatively new. He kind of, when he first came out, he was part of the Wyatt family. I don't think that hurt him. I think that enhanced all those three guys at the same time. But I have been enjoying his singles matches. I mean, of course, I cringe at the end when I know he's going to lose, but I enjoy him in the ring. Harper is one of those guys that anybody that you put him with, he does enhance the guy. He can have many different styles of matches, and I think over the long run, he's really going to help out Rowan, because Rowan is good for what he is, but he's not a singles guy.
No.
Right? And there's no way. He has to be a henchman or whatever, and that's why I was even like pushing like have Rowan pair up again with Bray Wyatt. But these two guys coming back again, I really like it.
Will you be satisfied if it's just them as a tag team, or you feel like it's only going to work if they get back with Bray?
I'd be satisfied with them as a tag team. I mean, the end, my end goal or my dream, or if I had a pick of what I want to do, bring those three guys back together. Because that, and I never understood why they broke those guys up. And that's actually kind of what, you know, what I wanted to talk to you about as well was, you know, there was no reason for those guys to break up. It wasn't like Bray was overpowering those two other guys. Rowan's going to be overshadowed whatever he does, but Harper was shining with Bray Wyatt, and I thought it lended a lot more credibility to him. I kind of like that Harper kind of has been by himself, and he's shown, at least to me, that he's going to be fine no matter what he does. But I like the spot that he's in, especially with the way the tag team division is shaping up right now.
Yeah, and the thing was, yeah, it didn't make sense to break him up because, like, even I felt it was really early to break up the Shield. At least you saw that each one of those guys had the potential to be a megastar as a singles guy. And when you're watching the Wyatt family, I mean, you knew Bray could be a star on his own. You knew Harper was a good worker, but I didn't necessarily know, you know, how that would go with him being on his own. Not because I don't think he has the ability, but I don't know where you go with storylines with him because
Bray... He's pigeonholed.
Yeah, and well, Bray's this really unique character. But Bray, because he can talk, is always going to be able to... He's always going to be okay. But Harper, I think, you know, they limit what he says and it works, but it's going to be hard for him to carry, like, a storyline as a mic guy. So I think, yeah, there was no chance that he was going to, you know, just take off as, like, a big-time single star, though I think he did have a good run. And Harper just was... No, Rowan was just no chance at all. And that was the one that... The guy that really left hanging out to dry. Like Harper, yeah, on his work alone, you can keep putting him on every show. He's going to put on a great match. People are going to like watching him. But it's limiting on what you can do with the stories. But Harper was just going to... Rowan was just going to go nowhere.
Well, it's funny that you have this tag team division. You have two really good tag teams with the Freebirds rule with New Day. And then you have Cesaro and Kidd. But the funny thing is that they really don't do a lot of tag matches. It's a lot of singles matches with the entourage there. And it's funny, you know, we talk about the tag team division is really good, but if you look at it, you have these tag teams, and what they're doing is that they're elevating these guys as not single, you know, not as single stars, but it shows what they can do singles-wise as well. And I think that's a formula that, for right here and now, that works really well. I think you can do that with Rowan and Harper. You know, probably start Harper, you know, start them off as a tag team, showing that they're dominant. And then, you know, start putting Rowan in singles matches with Harper there. And kind of, you can kind of do the same thing. And it might be an avenue, too, where the primetime players do that as well. I think the primetime players, they're a good textbook type of tag team. But I think, you know, Titus is a star. I think that Darren Young is a good worker. You know, he's kind of the guy that does the majority of the work, and Titus can come in at the end. But I think that's a way to kind of really establish Titus. And then I just think the way that they're approaching right now is working. But it's funny that they're doing it through a tag team division.
Yeah, and I mean it makes sense to me. Like the tag teams they've been breaking up, like throughout the last couple of years, is like you break up a tag team that's starting to go somewhere, and then you don't do anything with either guy as a single, and I think that's a problem. You end up with this roster that has all these singles guys that don't necessarily have anywhere to go, and then you're watering down your tag team division. So if you don't have any true direction with some of these guys, leave them as a tag team, help the tag team. You can get more guys into less time on TV, and it makes sense. So I mean, I think they're better served to keep, and I think that's one of the things that's really benefited them by bringing back factions in the last few years, right? The Shield, the Wyatts, you know, New Day, to a certain extent, like Kidd and Cesaro, right? You're getting like two and three talents at a time that you can put into a match against another two or three guys, and they all have something that makes sense, and you can go with it. So, yeah, I think that's good, and I think going forward, I think, and this is one thing I really wanted to ask you about, is the new tag team.
Where are you going? Where are you going?
Where am I going? of Sandow and Axelmania. So this is like right up your avenue because, you know, Macho is one of your all-time guys, and Sandow is kind of like one of your guys right now. So I guess first I'll start off asking what you thought about the Macho Man homage, so to speak, and what you think about that possible team there.
I don't know. Think about it. I mean, Sandow's just biting from the Poffo brothers left and right. You know, I knew it was coming because it was tweeted about by Sandow. You know, he's tweeting and stuff and everything, so I knew that the Macho thing was gonna happen. I'm hoping that history repeats itself in a small way, but only the positive side, because you had what's his name impersonate Macho in TNA. Who's the guy?
Black Machismo.
Yeah. What was the guy's name?
Jay Lethal.
What's that dude's name? What's your name, G? Jay Lethal. Okay, so, and Jay was able to take that and run with that gimmick, and then over time, people started realizing, like, hey, this guy's a pretty, above-average worker. But, of course, Jay Lethal's in the indies now, and, you really don't hear from the guy. He did train AJ, though, right? Yeah.
He did more than just trainer, my friend.
Okay. I don't want to get into that. Okay. But I don't know. I think you have these two guys in Curtis Axel and Sandow that are much more than what they are. They found gimmicks. At least Curtis Axel's found a gimmick that somewhat entertains the crowd. I don't think Sandow needs to find that gimmick. I think Sandow can be a straight worker and just see what happens with him. But at the same time, as big as this roster is, as deep as this roster is, you have to do something. You have to pair him up with someone, because he can't carry it by himself right now. I think he can. And I was kind of thinking, like, when WWF was deep in the 80s, you kind of had your main guys. You had your top guys, and you had kind of, you had Macho Man as Intercontinental. You had here and there Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And then you'd have, like, these guys, like singles guys, like a guy like Hercules, right? That was just, like, the guy that you wanted to watch, and he entertained doing these squash matches and stuff and everything. So I was kind of wondering, like, how does that translate to now? Because every singles guy right now is kind of like a big star. Not so much in terms of what they're doing, but they have a ton of fan support.
There's no true jobbers anymore.
Yeah. Well, not so much jobbers, but... there's not like this like kind of diamond in the rough. Like Dean Ambrose is established. Dean Ambrose has the backing. Your boy Dolph Ziggler, even though he was wearing eyeliner during Raw, he has a solid following as well. So all the singles guys, they either have great heat or they have backing by the fans. And there's not kind of like this sleeper guy that we can point to and say, hey, because what we used to like to do was like say, hey, there's this one guy here. And that guy's good. If he ever gets a push, he's going to take off. And we're like 11, 10 years old saying this. We didn't even know what a push was. But, we knew that the guy had something, some special thing that we some innate object, personality that we liked about him. I think Sandow is that way, but I just think with the way WWE is hyped, the hype machine that it is, you can't sit around and have this guy... kind of, you're right, you can't have him like beat jobbers or whatever, so he has to play on the upper echelon, and he's not there. I don't mind it. Am I thrilled with it? I'm not, but at the same time, it's like I waited maybe 4 or 5 years for Benoit to really take off, and I've been waiting like, 2 years for Sandow, so, I can wait and see what happens.
All right, so this will be my take. So, one, yes, Jay Lethal does the best Macho Man impression out of anyone like that I've seen within wrestling, dude. Lethal's was much better than Sandow's was. Sandow has the look, the pretty close look to what Macho Man is. Here's what I really liked. He fucking nailed the handshake, dude.
Yeah.
And so, like, as where it was going when he did the whole handshake with, like, holding his wrist and looking around and pointing at the crowd, and Axel played his part well, too. So if they're going to go and do some kind of gimmick infringement, they did it well. So I'll give them that. The other thing, too, in this, I'll give a little bit of credit to Ascension, because I thought they were pretty humorous in how they were coming out and saying, hey, you can't come and, like, take some old retired guy's gimmick, which is exactly what they're doing. So for anyone that kind of understands what's happening, that was a subtle little jab there. But I think just kind of what, like what we were saying about reuniting the Wyatts, right? If in fact that tag team goes to pass, I mean, that's two guys there that are good, competent wrestlers that have really no direction going right now, that are not going to break through as singles guys, and you go put them in what's becoming a really competitive tag team division. I think it can really work. I think Sandow, I mean, as much as I think we both believe like he can be like a pretty upper mid-card guy in terms of a singles wrestler, all the success he's had thus far is as a tag team, and he's done well in it. Curtis Axel has been a really good tag team wrestler as well. So I think both of them, if you're being honest, have had the most success in each one of their careers as tag team guys. So I think it makes sense in that standpoint. And the other thing, too, I'll say, and we talk about necessary evils on this show quite a bit. They always have to, WWE always has to have, like, a comedy gimmick, right? And while it kind of sucks that it has to be a guy that, you know, you see, like, legitimate potential in, I'm willing to watch, if their comedy gimmick is going to be Axel and Sandow, I'm willing to watch it because, one, most of the time it's going to be entertaining, and two, when you put them in the ring, they can go. It's not like watching Santino, where Santino isn't funny, and he serves no purpose, and he sucks in the ring. Or, like, kind of running out, like the Matador had its, like, 5 minutes, but, like, the Bull is played out, right? So this is an actual, like, comedy gimmick they have going that I'm willing to put up with, I'm willing to watch, because I know at the end of the day, once you put them in the match, they're going to get the job done.
Well, you're speaking of the Bull, and you saw what happened, right?
I saw that saying that they might take him away from the Matador.
Well, you saw it. You saw the match between them and the Lucha Dragons. I think it was SmackDown.
Yeah, really quick. I wasn't, like, focused too hard on it, but yeah.
You weren't focused on the Lucha Dragons?
Nah. Well, Kalisto looked good in there.
Yeah, he looked good. that fool looked good.
Sin Cara almost killed himself on the suicide dive. But what were you saying with the Bull?
Well, at the end, the Bull was consoling one of the Puerto Ricans, and the guy pushed him off. And everybody was like, oh, what's going on? You know, so there's something there, but it's kind of the same thing where, you know, it's you're looking at top to bottom. You know, you have Matadors, they're serviceable. Lucha Dragons, I'm putting my stock in them. Cesaro and Kid, Ascension has come around just because now they have some type of purpose. So I'm kind of drinking their Kool-Aid a little bit. If they serve as kind of like that heel team that hasn't really proved themselves and they have a false sense of grandeur to them, I'm good with that. And then you have New Day as well. So all around
Mega Powers.
Mega Powers, yeah. The Mega, I want the Mega Bucks to come back.
Mega Bucks.
Yeah, you can have
Ted DiBiase Jr. and the Big Show.
Yeah, that would work, yeah. Was Andre really your dad? So,
Maybe they could even get Virgil a job.
Virgil could, yeah, and then Virgil could sell the he can sell pictures of himself where he's blurred out in the background and Hulk Hogan's in front,
yeah,
and we can get his autograph, yeah. But you can't get Aaron Gray's autograph because you punked out.
Hey man, hey, she intimidated me.
you're sweating, man.
I was.
I gotta go change put the clothes in the dryer, dude. My house is a mess, man. You know, we're redoing our foundation.
It's in a state of ill repute.
Yeah, I need a flipping housekeeper, man. I mean, like, you should have saw the mound o laundry that we have in our bathroom over there, dude. So,
girls and I run the laundry machine. Yet?
Well, we've been busy, man. You know, swimming and baseball and having to deal with the punk parents that, you know, think their kids are the center of the world and stuff. Yeah, that's the biggest problem I have. You know. That's the biggest problem I have with coaching, dude. And this is something you can relate to, where you have some spoiled kid that never shows up to practice. The parents wanted you to change the practice. Everybody else can make the practice except for that one kid. And they expect you to change the whole practice around them, even though the field that's available has like an after-school program. So you pretty much have like maybe 5 feet to work with, and you have 12 kids, and you're trying to teach them how to play baseball in 5 feet. Of an area, but God damn it, that kid can't make it at Monday at 4 o'clock. So you have to change the whole schedule around, right? And then of course the kid doesn't listen. He sits on the ground all the time and plays in the dirt while a game's going on.
And then the parents want to know why he isn't playing shortstop
or whatever. But so no, I'm very This is single A. So every kid plays a position. And the whole thing is that they don't realize, like, so the first two innings, you know, when you play single A, you don't put your best fielders in the infield. You put them in the outfield. So you can try to get three outs in the last two innings. That's the way we do it. And so I know the mom's looking at me going, like, how come our kid's playing the outfield the first two innings? Like, well, because your kid's good. I want to put him, you know, try to get some outs and everything like that. And then the kid doesn't pay attention or whatever like that. He's sitting on the ground and all this stuff, and he's picking grass and all this stuff while the game's going on. He can get, like, clocked with the ball in the head, and they get mad because I'm telling the kid to get up or whatever, and he doesn't get up. It's like, so what do you want me to do here? You know, you want me just to have this kid, you know, run roughshod all over the place? And so they get all mad about that. And then, instead of talking to me about any concerns that they have, they go to the league and go, oh, this coach is too mean. And then at the same time, I have this assistant coach. He doesn't do jack shit. And then it was all good when I had this one coach, me and him coached for like 5-6 years together. We knew he was the nice guy. I was the hammer, right? I came in and got them in shape, and this guy was the nice guy. So all the parents felt good about themselves because they saw this really nice guy. But they never saw me. Like, the parents that knew, they saw me come in, and I made them actually, like, do stuff. Well, I have this assistant coach that just doesn't say anything. And then he starts trying to tell me, he's like, you're too rough on the kids. I'm like, well, what are you doing, dude? I mean, I didn't say it to him, but I'm going, okay, yeah, sure. I'm rough on the kids. Even though this kid is a flipping punk and he doesn't listen. And I got to take care of this kid that's spoiled. And nobody else can see that he's spoiled. His mom definitely can't see that he's spoiled. And what they don't see, though, is that every single time I go up to a kid, and, you know, and I talk to him, and I develop a relationship with him there. But they only see when I'm talking to, like, 9 or 10 kids, and they're all goofing off and touching each other's hair and, you know, being all slap happy with their gloves and stuff. So how do you expect me to be? You know, go, oh, come on, guys, let's all have fun here. That doesn't work that way, dude. You know, it's like you got to establish some type. We got to have some ball. And they don't see it. It's like, you know what? If you want to go complain to the league office, why don't you run the practice? You deal with the kids, and let's see how well you do. But you can't, because you're not a coach. And you know what? You're not volunteering all your time to your snot-nosed kid that doesn't listen in the first place. Well, what do you want me to do here? The kid doesn't listen at home. You expect him to listen at practice? And the whole thing is that he listens better at practice than he does at home. Because you want to know why? Because I'm actually firm with the flipping kid, you know? So.
And at home, you're only dealing with the one, and you're trying to deal with, like, 12 of them.
Yeah, but their kid's perfect. Nothing's wrong with that kid. That kid's he's an angel, dude, so. I'm mad, dude. I'm out of here, dude. You run this thing by yourself.
while I
go put the clothes in the flipping dryer. In my mess of the house, I have TVs all over the place.
And he's going off to buy a pretzel over here.
I'm
going to
get a pretzel. Where's Earthquake and Hulk Hogan to you?
Well, that was an interesting turn of events there. Bad News Ramen has to take care of some household duties. So, where would I go with this, then? Well, one thing that I'm kind of happy about, and I guess I'll use it to fill some space while he's coming back, is the return of New Japan on Access TV. So, if anyone out there was watching it and was a little concerned that they stopped airing programs about a couple weeks to a month ago, they started coming back playing the episodes that they had previously aired, and they went marathon style last week and played like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 of those episodes in a row. So I'm hoping that my man over here had his DVR set so he could catch.
I only got Tanahashi and Nakamura, the replay. I already saw that match.
But you didn't see, but that was the second one. You didn't see that, the hour long Okada versus Tanahashi.
I think I have it on first run only.
Ah, you have it on first run.
Yeah,
run. They went and they played like all 6 in a row. Damn. On Monday.
On Monday?
Yeah.
Damn, man.
So
and you couldn't call me about it? Or were you too busy talking to the league official saying that I'm a bad coach? What the heck, dude?
I was calling in on you.
You're a bad friend. Let me call your mom real fast. Hey, this guy isn't a good best friend.
I was rolling over on
and
you.
And your mom's going to go.
Hey, well, if you weren't yelling at the kid, man, let him pick his grass, dude. What's wrong with you?
Hey, if I wasn't smacking the kid, I mean, if I wasn't talking to the kid, here's the other problem that I have, right? This is another major, major problem that I have.
Is this Little League related?
No. This Mother's Day, dude. Mother's Day, man, we have to go all out for Mother's Day. You have to take care of the wife, then you have to take care of the flipping mother-in-law, then you got to take care of your own mom. And when Father's Day's come around, right? Does anything happen on Father's Day? Do you ever get a goddamn thing besides a flipping card on Father's Day? Here's the problem that I have, okay? So I'm redoing the foundation in my house, right? I'm doing all this stuff. I have a small little house. The rooms are all small. So we have to get a bunk bed for my older daughter because the room had like a big old queen-size bed in it. She had no room anywhere, right? So in order to get a queen-size bed, I had to pay someone to put hardwood floor in one of my outside rooms. So I have hardwood floor in one of my outside rooms. The bed's in there. My old TV's in there. And that's why you see so much stuff here, because we had to build a bed. But what was going on was, so we had Mother's Day, and then the father-in-law's 70th birthday, right? And so the father-in-law sends out a week ahead saying, save the date, on Sunday we're going to celebrate my 70th birthday, and we'll celebrate Mother's Day as well, right? So he makes like paella and stuff, really good, dude, right? So 2 days before this is all supposed to go down, all of a sudden, no, the mother-in-law decides, no, we're not going to have this together. We're going to have Saturday we're going to have the party, and Sunday we're going to have Mother's Day. I'm going like, I got to spend the whole weekend with you? It's like I got plans. I got to build this flipping bed. I got to go to IKEA to get the bed. Then we got to build it. So
got to get some Swedish meatballs.
Got to get the Swedish meatballs. I don't want to talk about those Swedish meatballs because I got shafted on those too as well. So
then nothing's going right this weekend.
That's what I'm saying, dude. So last Friday night, right? Friday night, I have everybody has a long week of work, right? I'm driving at 6:30. I'm driving to flipping Palo Alto, right, to buy this flipping bed. We come back at like 9:30. Okay, then Saturday we got to go and spend time with all these old fucks that are their friends and stuff. And it's like, why the hell am I even here for? I mean, what purpose am I here? It's like, you have all your old friends, why, you don't want to talk to me. And of course, they didn't talk to me. And here's the best thing, right? I work in grocery stores, right? They start talking about grocery. Don't even give me why you had a 70-year-old birthday party and they start talking about grocery stores. And they're talking, having a good old time, hooting and hollering, talking about the ins and outs of grocery stores and stuff. And I'm just kind of sitting at the kids' table, of course, and going like, so you guys do know that I work in a grocery store. Don't you want to include me on the conversation? Because I have some type of background in grocery. I only work grocery all my flipping life. It's not something I'm proud of. I enjoy it. But it's like, but that's what I have to deal with.
Nah, you ain't nobody.
But on top of that,
let's ask John what he thinks about merchandising. I ain't nobody.
On top of that, I have to buy my own beer because I can't. If I drink too much,
that was the question I've been waiting to ask. Did you get the pills?
No, I got the.
Which one is it again?
The tumor pills.
The tumor pills. He didn't share tumor pills with you.
Well, he.
Or did he make you mark it on the list?
Yeah, I don't even want to start. don't even start me on it. So. What he's been doing is he's been buying the boxed wine, because there's a ton, there's like four bottles in a boxed wine, but after a while the boxed wine kind of gets boring because it's wine in a box, right? Carver Reichen should know about that. He loves wine in a box. He's like, this wine in a box is pretty good. That's why I think we've been making fun of him too much, because he doesn't even promote us on Twitter anymore. So, yeah, Carver Reichen's, I'm sorry, dude.
You didn't back his play on that Neville tweet,
yeah.
But
I did. I responded to it.
I didn't.
I wasn't.
Continue.
So not only do I have to buy my own beer, I bought the Hell or High Watermelon from 21st Amendment Brewing Company, which about 3 years ago, I pretty much like just I stuck an IV in the beer can and just put it in my veins. I drank that stuff so much. So not only do I have to buy my own beer, but now I'm hanging around all these old people that I really don't care about.
While drinking your beer at the kids' table.
While drinking my beer at the kids' table, yeah, I think I slammed like three real fast. I mean, you have to, especially when they're talking about grocery stores and they're not including in the goddamn conversation. Dude, I own grocery stores around here. People know me in grocery stores. I'll have managers come up and go like, what are you doing? I'm like, dude, I'm setting this stuff up for you. I'm like, I look at them like, man, I've been at the store longer than you have, dude. Why are you coming at me telling me what I'm doing? It's like, this is my store. What are you talking about, dude?
The only thing better than that could have been if they started talking about wrestling and didn't include you.
Yeah. Or, hey, I'm thinking about doing a wrestling podcast. Hey, I'm thinking of getting on Twitter. How do you become successful on Twitter? Well, and I'm sitting going like, yeah, who's the one that has 660 followers? Or 70, I don't even, it might be, I have 690 followers. I can't get to that 700.
It's elusive.
It's your fault. So we get done. So we come home. We build the whole bed, like, in 2 hours. So it's, like, midnight. And I'm just, like, I'm just out of it, dude. And then we got to go back on Sunday. And it's the exact same thing. It's, like, people are asking, oh, well, what are you going to... Because usually I'll, like, cook, like, breakfast for all the mothers and stuff. Like, I cook a mean breakfast. I make mimosas and stuff. And they're, like, well, what are you going to cook for Mother's Day? I was, like, dude, I'm not going to cook anything. This guy sprung me in the last second. I got to go to a store for you. I got to go to a store for you guys. I feel like Joe Pesci over here, dude. So I just went in and just sat there, and it's just like, man, forget this.
Start pouring your own mimosas. And...
What? No, because I couldn't even go to the store to get any alcohol, man. So I just get tired of it, dude. I get tired of Mother's Day. I get tired of spending a weekend with my in-laws. I mean, nobody goes like, I'm going to spend the weekend with my in-laws today. And on top of that, on Saturday, I'm coaching that snot-nosed kid again. And I have to deal with that kid. And the mom's just like sitting there, you know, with her skinny bird neck and stuff, like looking all pissed off all the time, going like, you know what? If you're miserable, don't make me miserable. I'm in a good place. Don't mess it up. And people are trying to they're trying to put me in a bad place by having me spend 2 days at my in-laws' house. Ain't going to happen, dude. My house is a mess. Not going to happen. I'm sitting next to a... Is this your TV? I think it's your TV, right? Is this yours?
Could be.
Is that your TV?
Looks familiar.
It's the, let's see, what is this TV? It's an Orton?
Nah.
Orion?
Nah, that ain't me.
Okay, so I bought that one.
There you go.
Okay, yeah.
Man, I mean, you might have to go with the Frank Costanza Serenity Now, coming pretty soon here. No Seinfeld.
No, I wasn't as steep in Seinfeld or
Serenity Now. That was a good episode. He was trying to figure out a way to deal with the stress.
I'm not stressed out. I'm just pissed off.
Yes,
there's a difference.
Serenity Now.
There's a difference. Yeah, I gotta start using The Secret again. Remember The Secret?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm envisioning being in a good mood and I'm driving in my car in my drop top car with a big old goofy smile on my face. That might work.
With the diamond in the back,
yeah.
The sunroof top and the ride called Pinky.
Yeah. that's some good stuff right there. Daniel Bryan, what'd you think?
Well, I don't wanna see the guy retire. I don't necessarily like the push that he's getting. I think maybe he's getting a little too much. But he's
pushing what way?
Like, you know, when he's actually wrestling.
Right? Okay.
But like I respect the guy a ton. And I feel bad that they just dragged out like what should have been like his real run, his real moment. So kind of feels like he had two like potentially big moments that got really cut off short from injury. I hope the best for him, and I'd be happy for him to come back. But I hope he's smart about whatever it is, and if it's a point to where, you know, it's gonna affect his quality of life down the road, then I think that the guy's crafted himself enough of a niche in the business that he could do something off air. Honestly, you know what? Like, you've besmirched the abilities of my man Booker T on several occasions.
Are you being serious?
On the broadcast team, yeah.
You like Booker T on the broadcast team?
I like him because he's not Jerry Lawler.
Okay.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean he's good.
No, that's what I'm getting to.
That's like saying like Lord Alfred Hayes was good because he wasn't Tony Schiavone or something.
I could accept Lord Alfred.
Lawler wasn't as bad as Schiavone.
Lawler had his time, but for the last like 5+ years, Lawler's been just atrocious on the broadcast. So if that's what it is, you know, and they can find a way, because he's really developed into like having a good persona and good speaking ability on the mic. You know, the fans want to see him. I think he loves the business. If he can't perform, I'd like to see that they find something for him to do within the company, because I think that would be good. that's pretty much how I feel about it.
And it's kind of like a career that never happened, right? I mean, if this guy, if there's any definition of what a Hall of Kayfabe is, it's this guy. The only thing is that it wasn't the case because management in the long run saw dollar signs with him, but it took him a long time, and by that time, I think, at least, I don't know. I mean, I can't even say, like, the Smarks ever got tired of that guy. I mean, I was getting tired of him. It's funny, like, if you would have said, you know, 4 or 5 months ago that Daniel Bryan wouldn't be wrestling, we'd be like, man, the business is going to suffer. I don't think it suffered one bit from him being gone. I would have liked to see an Intercontinental run. But at the same time, it's kind of a case where you kind of knew what was going to happen with the Intercontinental run. It's going to kind of be a thing where I probably wasn't going to like it just because, I don't know, I kind of agree, like, with your, that he was getting pushed and it was the wrong time to push him. I think kind of he would have to reinvent himself again. And I think they missed a really big opportunity when he turned and faced the Wyatt family. I thought that was talk about a program that got cut short. I thought that got really cut short. And I wanted, you know, you probably could have got maybe 3-4 months out of that as compared to just the one. Mm-hmm. And if it was a case where they were winning a lot and stuff, and then, you know, and then you can kind of develop it where they're losing and everything. But, you know, I thought that was a perfect opportunity for him to kind of break out of the whole kind of fan favorite, like, you know, because of you fans, this is what it was. You've liked him on the mic. I really don't like him on the mic. I think he's really Pollyanna. But,
I mean, I think that he has those moments where, yeah, he can be, like, really corny and just really playing to the crowd. There's moments like that one, and I didn't think he got overly sappy, but, you know, if he wanted to have that moment and that point in time and thank the fans, I had no problem with that, because that,
yeah,
right? But I think that he's also cut plenty of good promos in these last couple of years, and I think that, you know, if they have him be a character at, you know, on a broadcast team that is just, like, you know, analyzed, I think he's smart. He knows the business. He knows the moves, which is something that Cole doesn't. And I think he could add a lot to a broadcast if he were to do it as, like, you know, a serious role and not as, like, this guy that's just kissing the fans' ass, which I don't think there'd be any need for him to be that guy on a broadcast team. So I think, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there as something for him to do. But I think there's a spot for him in the company. I think he's too hot for them to just say, okay, you know, well, if you can't wrestle, you know, then you know, goodbye. I think they're smarter than that, and I think he's got too much talent to just let him walk away. And yeah, I think that'd be the way to go with him if I was them.
Well, when he's saying all this stuff, my kind of underlying thought was that he's going to be back. You know, and he had to drop the Intercontinental belt, which I don't have a problem with. What I liked about was that WWE vacant, you know, got hot on Twitter again, the account where it's the vacant title, so, you know, he was able to have some fun with that. But the underlying thing is that it was just kind of like, okay, I mean, you are going to come back. You know, you even from what you said is that, actually, you know, I read somewhere that it's not as bad as people think it is, but he does need time off. Okay. But that's just kind of,
well,
you know,
if that's what it is, great. I would like him to come back, and I would like him to kind of reinvent himself.
I don't think that's going to happen,
I think there's, if he's fully healthy, there's a lot of good matches to be had. I mean, there's some great matches that he could have with Ambrose, with Ziggler. They kind of tease that. Him and Rollins, I mean, I think all those guys are just kind of tailor-made to battle. Balor comes up by the end, yeah. Tony, right? There's so many guys right in that weight class and talent ability that they can put on tremendous matches.
Well, I don't give Daniel Bryan enough credit. I don't like him as a babyface, but people seem to forget, or at least I've forgotten, that he was a great, I mean, he was a hot heel. You know, but it was kind of lost because it was just on SmackDown. But he played a really good heel, and that, you know, he really pushed that whole kind of Kane, you know, I mean, everybody says yes now, but back then it was no. And the no, I thought, worked really well, and that's when he started taking off. And then, of course, you know, he had to grow away from that, and then I didn't like it, you know. But I'm kind of waiting, you know, I wanted to see what else he could do. I don't like roles in wrestling, you know. I don't like, okay, you're going to be the top face, so this is what you have to do, and now you kind of have to pander to the fans. I don't like any type of pandering. I like a baby face that has, you know, natural charisma, can get by, can get on the mic, and really you know, cut a promo. I don't think Daniel Bryan ever lived up to that, but he can go both ways. I just think it's not a case where he's stopping himself from doing it. I think WWE wants him a certain way, and that's right. what they're pushing him. And it's funny. It's like, I think the biggest thing with him is that, okay, so he has the best chant in the business. He has the biggest fan support in the business. I mean, his chant goes across everybody. You know, if someone wants to show support, they start doing that yes chant. Well, if you have that much power out there, start kind of exercising it in the back as well. You know, and that's the change that I want. That's the change that I want to see from him, was to kind of, he plays, you know, him and CM Punk are very similar, but CM Punk is too abrasive. He says what he wants to say. I think Daniel Bryan is smarter than that, and he kind of works within the system, but I didn't see any change happen with that. So I think that was my biggest knock against Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. And I'll just leave it at that. One thing I did want to bring up was, and give a lot of credit to, there was an actual Divas match that I actually enjoyed. Tamina and Brie, I thought that was a really, really good match.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, good? No.
I think Tamina doesn't get a lot of credit, you know, for what she does. I mean, she was overshadowed by AJ for a while, you know, and I thought that was a good matchup between those two. But Tamina is good in the ring. The psychology of it was good. You know, Brie, you know, came in with that weak running knee, and she went for it again, and it got blocked, and then she super kicked it. Just the storytelling, and you know, and I think Brie had a lot to do with that as well. I think Brie has gotten lost in the shuffle. I think Brie was doing a lot of backbone work for that Divas division, and she never got the credit for it as well. But you have two really good workers in the ring in terms of Divas standards. But I think Tamina, you can kind of classify her. I think you can classify her as just as a straight wrestler.
Yeah. So, I've been a big fan of Tamina's in the ring. I think her and Natalya, over the body of work of the past 3 years or so, just in ring work, are the two best they got. So for me, I didn't think it was a great match from Tamina. To me, it seemed like she blew up. Right. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. You know, she's coming back from a long layoff, leg injury. So I didn't have a problem with it. I thought the psychology was right. I think the super kick is as good as anybody's right now. So my opinion was the match was too long, and I think she blew up, and I think it affected it a little bit. I thought that Brie was selling like nobody's business in that match. I thought she came off looking really good as someone that could make somebody look good. So she was selling off her ass, and I was pretty impressed with that. So, yeah, overall, I thought it was a pretty good Divas match. I felt it was a few minutes too long. I think they could have gotten more bang for their buck by shortening it a little bit, because I think Tamina wore down.
Well, don't you want, I mean, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but don't you kind of want it to be a little bit long instead of just being like these kind of squash matches that they usually have?
Yes.
Or stupid finishes that, you know.
No, I do. However, I'm saying that's the person that was like an odd spot to put someone that hasn't wrestled in like a year and a half, 2 years, coming off an injury, who, you know, and Booker tried to say like she put on 10 pounds of muscle. Booker's definitely walking the thin line of blasphemy, mentioning any potential like weight gain on any woman, especially someone who could super kick like that. So I'm not going to say whether it was muscle or wasn't, but I just think that wasn't necessarily the right time and place to have the extended Divas match. Like, if it was any other performer, I think Tamina will get there. You know, don't get me wrong. I have no doubts that I think she's probably the most underrated diva, because she's probably the only one that doesn't have the belt and probably could legit kick all of their asses. So she'll get there, but I just thought she blew up a little bit.
You know, one thing is that what makes any division is the heel, right? Like, you look at it with, like, New Day, right? Like, New Day, perfect heel, that division's hot. What do you think of that duo as the heel group? I thought Tamina, I liked her in the match, but I thought she cut a good promo, too. What do you think of that duo now as that heel team, and how do you think the other one's doing with her promos as well?
I think Naomi's doing pretty well. I think she's coming off as more serious, which is good. And like the logic that they've placed around it. I mean, she has the right to be angry, right? Like they did basically give her a title shot, and then the next day say, "Oh, we're gonna have a battle royal." So she has so the logic is there, she hasn't, even though like she's placed as the heel, she really hasn't done anything heelish to this point, I don't think. So it's been a really subtle shift.
She got the dreads, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, they have her in the darker clothing. Yeah. They gave her the braids. She's a little bit more direct. I guess she attacked AJ that one time. But for the most part, like, everything Paige. She's doing makes...
Paige.
She did... Didn't she also...
She might have attacked AJ, I don't know.
Yeah, I think she did. And then, yeah, she turned on Paige. But I think... Well, I think the setup is good. I think the promos are pretty good.
Well, what do you think about the state of the Divas division now? Because we thought when AJ's gone, there's no Divas division. But I think that's a division that has the most room for growth. Of course, it always does. But it's actually interesting. I mean, at least the storylines kind of are cohesive, and it's not, you're just not throwing people out there.
It's all right. I mean, I would give Naomi a better finish, but still, like, you've pretty much just narrowed it down to, like, there's four people involved in it. I really don't understand what's their whole holding pattern with some of the NXT divas. Charlotte's ready to go. Actually, I think Sasha Banks is actually pretty good. And Emma, you know, who knows? They strapped her with such a terrible gimmick. Now they seem like they're making her more of a straight wrestler. They're slowly introducing her, but she's kind of getting squashed. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. But they're still really centered around four divas, and then Naomi's like... Not Naomi, sorry. Natalya's there, but she's not really wrestling, right? So I think for what the Divas division then, it's okay. But I think, really, if you bring up Banks and you bring up Charlotte, and then I think you could have an actual real division with, like, that's maybe, like, 5 to 8 wrestlers deep that you could actually do something with, especially when Paige returns.
All right, well, let's get to the Golden Mike.
Before we go Golden Mike.
No. Mother's Day, man. Mother's Day. Go ahead.
So, I don't know if you caught this, but last week, ESPN's E60 had a documentary on NXT. So, it was...
I just shook my head no.
Right,
The producer is going to put that in.
Yes. So, I caught it. It was actually a pretty interesting documentary. So they basically, I think they've been chronicling it for like 2 or 3 years, and they basically followed like Xavier Woods and Adam Rose and somebody else.
You saw this documentary, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember who so the guy that really stood out to me was Rose, right? And
what?
Yeah.
Your boy Rose?
Yeah. Well, his story was pretty gripping. Like, it's like an ill child, right? That is pretty young and has survived like against the odds. But seeing him like kind of be who he was, right, was actually kind of like a guy. Is like actually kind of want to cheer for this guy right now. Like, I still don't like him in the ring, but seeing him as a person in that documentary is kind of like made me say, yeah, you know, this is a guy I would actually like want to see do well.
And how come WWE doesn't do this? You know, how come they can't do the thing with him?
Well, that was kind of what they're talking about, right? It was like, if that documentary, and then there was a little bit of people too that were saying, like, you know, he's kind of exploiting his child in a certain way, because I think he did kind of tweet something out, like a couple of photos or whatnot. But like the thing that I thought was the most interesting, it was a pretty interesting documentary, especially because it wasn't a WWE documentary, it was an ESPN one. But like Triple H is like super positive and like, hey, oh, that was great, that was good, oh, that was great. And like, yeah, it wasn't that good. Like, they kind of went through because like his previous character, and then who was like kind of a heelish, like serious character, was Leo Kruger. I think he's like some, like, you know. Not saying he was Skinner, but he was like some South African, like, whatever, right? And then, I guess...
What was he, the taper man?
And so he was like had this heel thing
going. Are there tapers in South Africa?
I don't know where the taper resides. I think it's a South American.
South America, okay, yeah.
So at any rate, they showed some production meeting, and they're saying, well, you know, this guy at this point, like, you know, is... Like, he's either got to do something or it's not going to happen. So then, out of nowhere, they basically, okay, you got to come up with, like, 10 ideas. And then they decided the Adam Rose one was the thing. It's just such a lame gimmick, dude. So there's actually, like, a little bit of groundswell to bring back Leo Kruger. And it kind of got me wondering, I mean, is this the better move for this guy? Because it seems like they're going heel with him anyway. I mean, the Adam Rose is such a dumb character, dude. And, like, to see him do his match and come back and DeMott and Triple H just nutting all over, like, oh, that was great, man. That was, like, really? It's a shit.
You think that was for the cameras?
Absolutely. Yeah. I absolutely think it was for the cameras.
Triple H is a nice guy.
Dusty Rhodes kept it real in there, though, on the production meeting. You know, like, they were talking about Xavier Woods, and then they were saying, like, hey, this guy's, you know, he's got all the skills, this guy's great, and then, like, Dusty Rhodes goes, he shouldn't be here right now. It's like, if this guy's going to be anything, he shouldn't be in NXT, he should already be on the main roster. And I, like, Dusty had a good, like, I don't know, his eye for what was going on was pretty strong. But, like, Xavier Woods was, you know, like, he was way more, I don't know. He's kind of finding, like, his voice now, I think. But what he was on that documentary compared to, like, the Xavier Woods that first came out, like, I mean, it was, again, kind of like with the Triple H thing. Like, you got some guys that, like, their real-life personality is way more entertaining and compelling than what the act that they're trying to do on TV. And I think they miss the boat on that sometimes. But I thought it was a really good documentary.
All right, so something I have to watch, huh?
Yeah, if you can, I mean, it's ESPN, so they replay them pretty often. Yeah. But yeah, it's worth the watch.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. It makes me think of the state of the WWE where they're really gimmick-based as compared to finding out, you know, instead of a wrestler coming into a zone and having people know who this guy is and follow the guy, I think they do that on purpose, you know, and I don't want to call it like the CM Punk effect or whatever it was, but, you know, who's been the hottest wrestler over the past 5 years is CM Punk, because CM Punk was who he wanted to be and people bought into it and people wanted to follow that, and it was something that they couldn't control. And I think I think that's kind of one of the downfalls of wrestling when, you know, you kind of look at New Japan where they're very gimmick based, you know, for the most part. You know, they have like an overlying gimmick, you know, like respect and fighting spirit and, you know, entertaining the crowd and stuff, but they deliver in the ring, where you have some guys that can't deliver in the ring. Adam Rose definitely doesn't deliver in the ring. I look at him and I see his matches, and I think the biggest problem was that when he first came out, he was beating guys that he shouldn't have beaten. But I always look at him like, you know, there's something there, and you can go back on the podcast. I've said there's something there with him. Mm-hmm. It's just not this gimmick. And it's kind of sad that this isn't happening. And it kind of makes me kind of fear a little bit for Finn Balor as well. You know, it's like, you don't need to strap this guy with the gimmick. You know, just, if you want to strap him with a gimmick, strap him with that Bullet Club gimmick. That gimmick was working. I mean, have Adam Rose be part of his crew and have him get a piggyback right from Adam Rose, you know. You know, or bring back a Bad News Foley or whatever it was. What's that guy's name? Bad Luck Foley or Bad News?
Bad Luck Foley.
Yeah.
Well, and then this will go way tangential, but I'm kind of sad I don't get to see it, even though it is TNA. But TNA, because WWE released Meng Sun, Camacho, yeah. Right? And then he's now in TNA, and actually he had an appearance with Haku over there, and I think they're actually doing something with him. Like, that could have been the perfect guy, because that would be, like, the one member of the family that isn't in Bullet Club. Yeah. That could be the guy to watch his back. But I did remember the third guy that they were documenting was Corey Graves on that, and that one was actually really interesting, too. So we can go into the spots. But, yeah, if you get a chance to watch it, then maybe we can talk more about it next time. But it is actually a pretty good documentary.
All right. Sounds good. Give us a second while I cross my fingers that we don't miss this.
Well, some very important single matches on that card. You, Jesse Ventura, are signed to meet a sensational Tito Santana, really making his mark here in the AWA.
Well, let me tell you something about Chico Santana.
Tito.
Chico. You know, a few years back, there was a show on television called Chico and the Man. Yeah. Now you got Chico, and right in front of you, Jack, you got the man.
The body.
The body, the man. The man who's going to do Chico in prior to the Battle Royal. And then Chico can swim back across the Rio Grande where he came from.
Oh, come on, that's enough of that kind of an insult. Gentlemen, please.
And then after that, Mr. Adonis and myself I'm going to get in that ring, Adrian. You leave the giant to me, brother. I'm going to pick up that big Andre. I'm going to press the dude once.
Oh, my.
Press the dude twice.
Jesse,
and then toss him right out of the ring. And Adrian and I are going to walk with 50 grand when just the two of us are left. Ain't that right, Adrian?
Right. That's right, Jesse. I like to say this, Jesse. I have to, you know, interpret this. He cannot swim across the Rio Grande because there's alligators in it. I just like to say this right now. The Battle Royal, everybody's chicken to wrestle me. You know why? Because I have a good habit of making people physically exhausted after wrestling matches. They cannot get their breath because I am like a Vegematic out there. I slice and dice and I tear people apart. Everybody's chicken to wrestle me. Now I'm coming into the Battle Royal fresh as a daisy, Daddy. And let me tell you something. Everybody's thinking, throwing people out and everything, right? Well, how do they do that? Nobody knows about balance in that ring except for me, Daddy, and Jesse Ventura. I've been doing tire drills, the karaoke where one leg passes through the other and you just go down sideways, linebacker drills. I know balance. I know rhythm, Daddy, and I can dance, and I'm going to win the $15,000.
I mean, Jesse's gold in that thing. Like, Adrian's losing me a couple times there, calling people chicken and talking about balance, but Ventura...
He's a Vegematic.
He's a Vegematic.
nobody even knows what a Vegematic is
at
anymore.
At least that's not a dated reference. For the new generation, it was the 80s version of a slap chop. How's that?
Slap chop?
Yeah.
Yeah, with that crazy guy, right?
Yep. But Ventura's gold on there. I'm going to take the giant, press him once,
Chico,
press him twice.
Chico and the man.
Yeah, I'm the man.
Well, it's funny to watch that guy. You know, Jesse's kind of getting his chops there, right? I mean, he wasn't as polished as it was when we heard him when he was on the mic as an announcer. But it's neat to see, like, you know, him kind of getting into his own. It wasn't like an all-star type promo where he's just shooting everything down. But the stuff that he had at work, Adonis isn't that bad. It's funny, like, you look at the video, Adonis is actually skinny in that thing, dude.
I wouldn't go so far as to say he was skinny. But
well, he wasn't as bad as when he ballooned up.
Right. It was a decent 80s promo for Adonis. But, yeah, calling people chicken.
Ooh. Whoa, hey, ooh. That's the first time it ever happened, dude.
Yeah, hey, and that was...
You're a chicken.
Yeah, you're a chicken. People are chicken the rest of
you. You're a jive-ass turkey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
what was that one?
Hey, they can get away with a lot more racism back then, too.
Yeah, well, we didn't play the other ones.
Right? I know, I was wondering if there was a theme going there, because... the previous Greg the Hammer Valentine ones.
Well, let's hold off.
Okay.
Hold off on that one.
All right, but still, like that's pretty edgy for Ventura to. You wouldn't be able to get away with telling someone to swim back across the Rio Grande these days. But at least Adonis saved him and brought up the alligator aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You might
interpretation.
You might be able to get by with that. I mean, I was stuck behind some guy in this big old doily truck, or whatever. You know, they had the extra tires or whatever. What's that called? Doily or dollies, I don't know what it's called. My brother, the producer, like, called it one time. He's like, oh, that's a doily. I'm like, what the hell is a doily? He's like, oh, it's the one that has those double tires or whatever. But it was all about
He does watch NASCAR, so.
Yeah, he does, yeah. But, you know, it's all about the gun, you know, it's all about the gun control and, you know, did you vote for Obama and all that stuff and, you know, I'll kill you if you vote for Obama. Just,
Jason?
No.
Oh.
No. Jeez. What happened to that guy? That guy's my brother. He used to be a good guy. No, it's this truck out
there. Oh, the truck, okay.
Yeah, with all these bumper stickers and stuff.
Was Charlton Heston his president?
No, but it. I think there was like a part of the truck that had kind of had like a smeared thing that got taken off, so maybe he took off the Charlton Heston is my president. But
because I see he's yours every time I get
Well, it's the National Rifle Association, right? Yeah.
Yes.
That was the previous house, dude. I don't know why. I don't know why they did that. But
I don't know why you still have
but,
it.
But you know, it'd be a good thing for when. It'd be a good thing for when I have all these people come up and try to sell me stuff. I'm like, hey, you see that sticker right there? I got my rifle in the back, and then probably that mom will call the board of directors again and be like, he owns a gun and he's probably coaching my kids and all that stuff. So,
agreed.
Okay, so Hall of Kayfabe. I have a guy. But I don't know if we put him in yet. Yeah, we might have. So, have we put in Dean Malenko?
I don't know. I kind of thought we had. That name kept popping up in my head. I kind of felt like we did, because I remember discussing Boris Malenko earlier, and I don't think that we ever would have brought up Boris if not for Dean. I don't know. I think he is, but I... I don't want to shortchange the man. I mean, he definitely deserves to be in if he is.
Okay, but we don't know if he was or not.
We don't know. We're gonna have to have the producer.
Man, he has to go through 110. Hey, 110
man, he's got to do something. Come on.
So this guy, my brother, right?
Yeah.
He's vying for this promotion, but he might have to relocate to Idaho. And I'm like, Idaho? You're gonna go to Idaho? And he's like, yeah, you know, it'll be good. I'm like, well, it's not gonna be good for me. What the heck, dude? Can't go to no Idaho.
I mean, it can't be much worse than Sacramento.
Well, it's probably better than Sacramento.
Going to Sacramento.
But Idaho, we're trying to solve for time. I'm trying to think of a wrestler. You have a guy?
I had an idea.
I have a manager.
And now I'm blanking.
Not you? Nah, not you.
No.
I'm the only one that's allowed to shoot blanks around here, dude.
That's true. Dude. Oh, come on. It was good.
You want me to hit pause?
Yeah, I'll hit pause.
This is going bad from worse, man.
All right, so I did kind of vacillate on whether I wanted to induct this guy as a singles wrestler or do this as a tag team. I think I'll just go ahead and propose this as a singles wrestler. I'm going to put Shelton Benjamin in.
I thought we put Benjamin in.
Did we put Benjamin? I don't remember putting Shelton Benjamin in.
Didn't we talk about his ladder matches and stuff or anything?
I thought we did that. We were talking about ladder matches.
Okay. When we put the ladder match
if not, we could go World's Greatest Tag Team, because that was the other...
I never saw the World's Greatest Tag Team.
Never saw the World's Greatest Tag Team?
No.
I thought you didn't. You never saw when Angle brought those guys in?
No.
Well...
I saw Shelton Benjamin towards the end of his run.
Okay. Well...
And so this is going to all be... Put the World's Greatest Tag Team in.
All right. So, I thought this was really good idea at the time, this Attitude Era kind of tail, like towards the end when they had Kurt Angle in and they decided to give Kurt Angle a faction and they gave him two like legitimate collegiate wrestlers. One was Shelton Benjamin, the other one was Charlie Haas. So they played off well of the fact that Charlie Haas had little to no personality, so he was kind of like the Lance Storm type of guy. And then you had Shelton Benjamin, who, you know, wasn't really great on the mic at that point in time, but Kurt could cut the promos. But the thing was, all three of those guys were really good workers in the ring. And so I thought Shelton and Haas, like, a couple things. They played with each other really well, like, as a team. They had really good teamwork. They're both, you know, really good technicians in there. But I also kind of like, you know, it was one of the few times where, you know, WWE didn't just pigeonhole, like, okay, we got a black guy, let's throw him in this black faction. Like, he had a good wrestling, collegiate wrestling background. Shelton Benjamin's backstory, right? You know why? How he got into WWE?
No.
Okay, he was Brock Lesnar's roommate in Minnesota. Minnesota, tremendous athlete. And basically, Lesnar, I think maybe they were practicing together or something like that when Lesnar was getting ready. And he basically told him, hey, you got to take this guy too. And they took a look at him and they brought him. Shelton Benjamin, awesome athlete. good wrestler, like has that really good combination of athleticism, but like pretty big and powerful. Yeah, he really made his name as a singles guy, throwing him as kind of fodder in a lot of those Money in the Bank ladder matches, but kind of in the same way that Kofi has always had his Royal Rumble moment. Shelton always had some crazy spot in the ladder matches. But him and Haas, that was a really good team. I thought it was the perfect group at the time to put around Kurt Angle, and for the kind of wrestling that we like, you know, we like technicians, you know, we like mechanics in the ring, and you had like a faction of three guys that were all just that. There was no like power guy. There was no high flyer in there. It was three guys of about the same build and the same kind of athletic ability, but they could just get it done in the ring, and it made for a bunch of really good matches.
Well, I like Haas's his submission. There, you remember the submission I'm talking about, where the guy's on his stomach and then he grabs, you know, he locks his neck up and he just pulls straight back. Mm-hmm. I really like that submission. I thought that was a really good submission. That group almost got me back into watching wrestling, just because I knew Kurt was doing some good stuff, and I like Kurt as a heel, and he wasn't doing kind of like the 1950s, you know, Gully G type heel. He was actually like a legitimate heel. Shelton Benjamin, you can just look at him, know that he was good. So, I mean, and I've probably seen maybe three or four Shelton Benjamin matches, and they've always been, you know, he's always been squashed. He's never been like a legitimate threat for anything. But, yeah, I mean, that good worker from when I saw him.
Yeah, Shelton had like
I know he had a good run.
Before he left, he had a good run of being the Intercontinental, the U.S. champion for quite a bit. They changed up his gimmick. He had the gold standard thing going. You never saw him as the gold standard.
I remember he had the
gold hair and the gold trunk. Yeah. And so he had a good run there. And then, you know, he's had a really good run in Japan as well. So, you know, I think he's really made the most out of his career. And just I liked that team. I liked that team at the time. And I thought everything worked. And Mike Haas, like, for just being a straight worker with, like, not a super athletic guy like Shelton, and with not a ton of personality, I thought he carved out a pretty good career in the WWE also.
And you got to go home to Jackie Gata every night and stuff?
It's Jackie Gata.
What was it? Wasn't he married to her?
I'm not sure who she is.
She was that blonde that had the... She was part of Tough Enough?
I do not recall.
And she had that botch match with Trish Stratus? Like the worst like match ever where she botched everything.
I don't know who that one is.
Okay, cool. Maybe he's married to her. Maybe he's not. So that just shows why that guy's in the Hall of Kayfabe. No, we don't have to look at
it. I'm curious now.
So now I get to talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling. So
even though I did it while you were
yeah I know but longer. So as long as it's back, I'm fine. I'm ready to get back on board because I've been missing it. So. You done yet?
Okay, continue.
Well, and that's all I'm gotta listening. Say. What the hell?
I thought you were gonna talk about it, dude.
Well, there's nothing to talk about because it was the Tanahashi and Nakamura match again. So I saw it and I was like really excited. I was like, oh, I'll get to watch an hour of this, and it was the exact same match. I had to watch that stupid guy on the guitar again, with the intro to Tanahashi, and then
the air guitar.
I had to watch Tanahashi play the air guitar.
Hey, that guy was shredding it, dude. What are you talking about? You are right. He's married to someone named Jackie. So
yeah, see, I know my stuff, D.
John, you are an oak.
I try. Okay, so Game of Thrones.
Good. All right, I'm glad.
Good.
I have a question for you, and you may or may not answer this.
Yeah.
I meant to ask you this last week. Okay. There was, in I think it was the episode 2 weeks ago, right? So you know how the Red Lady is kind of like. Kind of flirting with Snow here and there, and then when she was kind of trying to seduce him and he pushed her away, and then her last line as she left the room was, "You know nothing, Jon Snow." Now, is she also like the redhead wildling? No,
no. I just shook my head no again.
Okay,
no, not that I know of.
No to new.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering if like maybe like because she's some kind of like sorceress enchantress kind of woman, if she could like. Be another person at the same time, or
no?
Okay, I was just curious because that line resonated, and the fact that they're both redheads.
But that religion can bring people back from the dead. So just keep that in mind as well.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know I'll leave that open ended. But yeah, so I'm at a loss. I mean, I like the season because it's not following the book. You know, Barristan doesn't die. So, and I'm not mad about it. Mad's not the word. Upset's not the word either. But it's a good character. I would like to see him continue. I think I know why they're doing it, and I know what the story arc is going to be for Daenerys. So I can kind of see why they're doing it. But yeah, it's gonna heat up pretty soon with that.
Yeah. It's kind of like maybe how I felt when the Hound died. Like, yeah. It's kind of like. It's like there's a void.
Well, let's say that the thing with the Hound, though, is that the Hound, like, he died, but in the book, when he dies, there's so much character development with him in the book where you're just kind of starting to go, like, man, like, the Hound died. In the TV series didn't really kind of, I mean, yeah, he died, but it's the way he died.
I thought they were developing the Hound really well.
Yeah.
I really liked that character quite a bit, or I would have never thought that I would from the beginning of the show, but... Like, the way they kind of, like, showed him as kind of being this guy that got bullied by his brother, and the way that he was with Arya, I thought was really good. I really liked that character a lot.
How did they end the episode? Do you remember?
This episode?
Yeah. Do I got to pause it again?
I don't remember. No, I don't remember what the last scene was.
All I know is it was when they bought the Stone Men. And they
ended up on the beach.
And Mormont he's starting to get that disease and stuff. So,
they're like lepers, basically.
Yeah, the way those guys were. I mean, that's what the end result of that sickness is. Right. Is. It's kind of there's another character that they have in the book that is not in the TV show, and they kind of delve into that a little bit more. So. But it's gonna pick up pretty fast. I mean, stuff's gonna go down, and you know you're gonna have the Sand Snakes. They're gonna be involved in the next couple episodes, and that's a legit storyline. So
yeah, that's good. I'm really curious to see what's gonna happen in the North, right? Like how the Wildlings are gonna respond, and if they're gonna join Stannis. I think that Stannis character kind of like gets stronger and stronger by the week. And like Snow, like you know, you've always known like he's like he's the guy that's kind of been in the background for the last couple of seasons. Where like the first season, I thought like he was really well established and a guy that you really like. And then they've been like establishing who he is throughout, but they really go to him rarely. And then like it feels like it's finally kind of getting some momentum to where like Jon Snow is like finally gonna get to you're finally gonna get to see what Jon Snow gets to do. Now that said, the way this show is, that probably means he's about to get killed, but. I got a good feeling about Mr. Snow.
It's going to be a good cliffhanger, I'll tell you that. The season finale is going to blow up Twitter a little bit, I think. So if I think what's going to happen is going to happen, I mean, I know what's going to happen, but if they show what's going to happen there's going to be about two or three really big type of things that happen where you're just sitting there going like, what the heck's going on? So, but the problem is that the book needs to get released. for it to continue, because they're moving pretty fast. I mean, the storyline is going really, really fast. And
how many books are written?
I think there's six books, I think, or there's at least like five or six. So
this is season five.
This is season five, but they're progressing really fast. I mean, they're moving pretty fast in terms of they're getting right in line with the books at the same time. So. It'll be interesting to see how far they go this season, but it's you know what I like about the season is that they're changing so much of it that I get to watch it and not watch it knowing what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So that it's been good and there's going to be some setup. And the funny thing is like Bran's not even involved yet. There's been no Bran this whole season,
right.
And I don't even think they're going to get to him this season because
right.
he's
I don't think they are getting to him this
yeah,
season.
He's doing some major stuff as well, and that's a pretty. His arc is pretty open ended, and some good things can happen with that arc too. And it hasn't been I can only guess what's happening with Bran in terms of in the books. But I think you know you have some. It's funny you have some major players, and Bran is definitely one of them. And Bran, I think, when all said and done, could be one of the most powerful guys in the whole kind of universe that he's created. So it's good, man. I've enjoyed it. It's not as hard hitting as like the you know as the previous season when you had I was just waiting for Joffrey to die and stuff, and you know everybody was so pissed off at the Lannisters, and I'm like Lannisters are going to get their due, man, don't worry about it, they're going to get it. And then you know so you had Joffrey die, and then you have Tywin die at the end and stuff, so that was a lot of stuff happened too. But you know, keep your eye out for Cersei 2. Cersei's going to have some major stuff happen to her as well. You're going to like it. It's going to be good.
I gotta think Cersei's not gonna be around a whole lot longer. That would just be my guess. I mean, I think she'll have like something important to do before she goes. But I'm thinking they gotta get rid of her at some point.
Watch the teaser again. You know, if you can watch the teaser, if you watch that teaser and really kind of dissect that teaser, you can probably figure out what's gonna happen to her.
The preview for this coming episode. Is that what you're
talking
about?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be able. You can kind of. You might be able to put the dots together, see what's going to happen to her. It's pretty clear cut what's going to happen to her, okay. If you kind of watch it. So that's the only teaser I'm going to, or that's the only semi spoiler I'm going to give. But it's been good. So we did an hour and a half of this. I didn't think we were. I thought it was going to be a quick shot, a straight shot to the dome.
Straight shot, no chaser.
Yeah. So Moon Scale number 110. We have my boy. Better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And we will check you out next week. When's payback, dude? 2 weeks?
That's this Sunday.
This Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're going to ask me if I'm going to be there.
that was me putting my hands up in the air, palms up, with a shrugged shoulder. Like,
what's going on?
Yeah, what's up,
just don't do that Zeus eye again. I don't want to see that Zeus eye. Don't do it.
If I do it, will you come?
You're like your daddy. I'm hunting little Mexican girls.
If I eat the shit, will I get a steak?
Ouch. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I don't know. I don't care. I'll eat it. I'll eat the whole thing.
He no cry.
Big steak for this guy right here.
he no cry. All right, man. Let's get on with the channel.
Villain!